the brethren have asked me to speak. I always prefer others. I think this ought to go without me saying it, but I've said it over and over again. I always prefer the others than to myself. But I don't want to shirk my duty. If it's my duty, if it's God's will in my life for me to take this part, then I don't want to run from that. I like to hear preaching, and I like to preach if God will be with me. I felt that we had a great meeting here today. I had so many. And that's what does me good. Not that I can glory in what I've done, but when the people of God are comforted, and God has been glorified in the worship, and His people have been edified, then there's a consolation of the minister of God, that He has fed the flock. Feed my sheep and feed my lambs. And this is a wonderful thing. I don't think my uncle is here tonight. He's not here. I looked over the congregation. They were here visiting this morning. Not the one that's a member here, but one of my uncles. And out in the dining room, I know something happened in here today in a way that was impressive, because it was very unusual for him, knowing him as I know him. He came to me right in the midst of all of everything was going on as was around the table, and great big tears came down out of his face, and he says, "I wished I was fit to be baptized and could be baptized." And I said, "Well, you could be." I said, you are worthy. All of us are worthy. None of us are worthy in ourselves. I said, we're worthy in the Lord. I said, you're already a member. You just hadn't been put your name on the book in that sense of the word. And he just turned and walked off. I don't know how many people feel like that. I was really not expecting that. It was kind of a shock to me. A little bit, because I know he's a good man. I know him very well. He's a good man. But I know his peculiarities also. And I know he wouldn't have said what he said, my friends, voluntarily. I know that. He just said that really out of an impulse. That, why do God's children, why do any of us, let me ask myself, why are we so rebellious? It is amazing. It is almost beyond reasoning to think about how rebellious all of us are. I say all of us because I've joined the church and I've come in and took my place. Well, I got my joy. I believe the Lord led me. I believe I followed the leadership of the Spirit of God. I believe I came in right. I believe I did. Or I wouldn't have got the joy that I got. And I've had many blessings to come my way. But I still have problems. I have to fight with myself, my daily battle. And it seemed this afternoon, as my wife and I walked in and out of the doors of the hospital, I was in the hospital part, but then she was with me in the nursing home, from room to room. And every room, I think most every room we went into several, we didn't have the time, but they wanted prayer in each room. And in my feeble way, I bowed my head before God to try to pray. And I could feel the closeness of God in trying to pray and asking God His blessings upon those who are facing, you might say, death itself, right near the end of the way. Somebody would say, well, why waste your time on people that's just about used up? We ought to be interested in getting the young ones in. Well, I am interested in getting the young ones in. But I tell you one thing. If there's anybody in the world that we ought to be showing interest in, are those who have spent their lives in God's kingdom and have come down near the end. If anybody needs comfort, I believe it's those people. They need the comfort of God and the comfort of the ministers of God and the comfort of God's Word. A lot of us, when we're down and out and things are not just right with us, we are maybe upset or whatever, we can sort of turn and find something else and gird ourselves and go forth and find an activity that might bring about a little diversion. But those who stare at the wall, one dear lady told us tonight, almost night, that she looked at my wife and I and she says, "Everybody in my family is dead." She said, "I'm just here alone." And, oh, brother, I tell you, my heart went out. I don't think we really realize what we have and how much God has been good to us in our lives to be able to go home and find wife and children and mother and others that I noticed at the funeral yesterday at Smyrna, Georgia. This woman is a very peculiar woman. I like her very much. She's so different. In fact, if you didn't know her, you would misjudge her readily not to know her disposition. To hold up and to laugh at a time when other people are crying. But she fought all of that back because her husband had said, "I don't want everybody, you know, weeping over me." Says, "I feel like I've got a better place to go and I know this is going to happen to me." He went with her and she said, "Now you go into this particular convention of the," he was a sheep breeder, and said, "You're going to this and you're going to have to get a new suit. You can't wear them old clothes you wear all the time." And he never said anything about new suits and things. He said, "Well, we'll go shop for me a suit then." He said, "I don't want you to buy them polyesters and the cheapest ones you can get." He said, "No, we're going to buy an expensive one because I'm going to be buried in." And he was. He picked out a nice suit of clothes. He said, "This is my bearing." He told the man when he was buying, he said, "This is my bearing suit. So this is what they're going to bear me." 45 years old. But anyway, this lady held up till the time when we started to turn from the casket at the cemetery back to the car. We started to make that turn. She held all she could hold. I never heard such a cry go out. She said, "I can't leave him. I can't leave him here." And what I'm trying to say in all of this, I'm trying to say, why are we so rebellious when, as ministers, brethren, this is the greatest thing on earth. To be able to be with people. It's better to go into the house of mourning than the house of mirth. It's my nature to be where people are happy and people are laughing and the world of joy is my nature. By nature, I'm this way. A lot of people don't understand me. I laugh outside when I'm crying on the inside, but this is a nature about me. But when I think about the importance there is and the things that we could do, the help that we could render to people in this life, why are we so rebellious? Why are we as ministers so rebellious? To find other things and other interests. And I start first with myself. And then again I turn around and I say, not only as ministers, but somebody else in the church besides ministers, what about the deacons? Well, sometimes, brethren, you're rebellious too. You're not always just as obedient as you ought to be about your duties as offices in the church of God. It's important. You say, well, now, Brother Deacon so-and-so, he's always there, and he's going to be there, and we're counting on him. No, you're supposed to be there, too. Why count on just one good, faithful brother to be there? You're obligated to be there. See, all of this fits every one of us. And so, as deacons or leaders in the church, you can be rebellious. You can be rebellious against your admonition. You say, well, the pastor will cover all these things. Did you not know as deacons you need to exhort the church sometimes on matters that would be a lot more effective toward the church if you did it and took it off of the pastor to do it? Yes, there's responsibilities. There's things you need to teach them. And the church suffers greatly many times. We have members that come into the church that absolutely do not know what their duties are as members of the church. But don't let me lay it all on the deacons. The Bible says that the older or elder members should teach, the older men should teach the younger men to be sober, to be honest, and all of these things. Did you not know as an older, experienced member of the church, as a male member of the church, if a young male member comes into the church as a father to a son, you accept the responsibility? You know a lot of times what we say, I hope he makes it, he's in here now, he joined, and if he's all right, he'll make it, if he's got it in him, he'll endure it. Well, my friend, let me tell you something. A lot of times, he has to endure it. But there's a lot of things that a young man needs to know in the conduct as a member of the church. His duties, his responsibilities, and that responsibility does not belong necessarily in the pulpit altogether, though that's a part of the whole teaching. I think I have the responsibility, and all other ministers have the responsibility, to teach in all aspects of the gospel. Deacons and elderly brethren and older sisters and younger sisters and all in the congregation of the church. We have this as a great part of the gospel, and we need to preach it all from the pulpit. But actually, the one-on-one teaching is not necessarily to be done by the pastor. He doesn't have time to do all of this. The administrative portion of these things cannot be done by one man. If you expect one man, the preacher, to do all the visiting and do all the teaching and do all the administrative part of the church of God, you'll break the back of the pastor. Because you're putting on him a responsibility that he can't bear. You know, when the multitude of disciples had grown, you see, in the beginning, the apostles, they were not only the preachers, but they were the deacons and the administrators of the church. They had to handle the whole thing was laid on them. But when the multitude of the disciples increased, then the responsibility, there began to be a murmuring of the Grecian widows against the Hebrew widows. It looked like they were showing some partiality here in the administrative part of the church. And so there needs to be, these things need to be handled in a more way of discrepancy. And so it says, look you out among yourselves, seven men of honest report, of full of the Holy Ghost and wisdom, and appoint them over this business, not the business of the church, but this business, and that is all that can pertain to this, that we may give ourselves unto the ministry of the preaching of the word and prayer. There is the greatest work of the minister of the church of God, is that he may give himself to the preaching of the word and the prayer. How? Just to pray at the church? No. Like I did this afternoon and other occasions, there's times that people need your prayers. They need the prayer of the pastor. There's a work that the pastor can do in a home in a time of tragedy and sorrow that no one else on earth can do. The doctor, you name it.
the best neighbor, the best friend, the nearest relative of the family. No one can fill the place of a loving and faithful pastor to come in the time of this need, given the prayer. Not to go just to preach, but to go to pray with these people. Pray for them. They have needs. They have needs in their homes. They have needs. And we need to be available to these needs. But if we've got to handle and run and take care of all of these other things, then we cannot do that. And so the appointed deacons over this. And so the deacons then could turn and look after the administrative part of this. And we've neglected so greatly in many ways, I think, brethren, in the church. We have neglected many things that are our obligation. Now, there's a lot of things that's not our obligation in the church. And it takes a lot of wisdom to know whether or not a thing is an obligation of the church or not. It says that the church be not blamed. In other words, widows, that's not a widow indeed. If she's not a widow indeed, she's not to be placed as a burden and responsibility on the church. Because if she's got, if she's been the husband of one, if she's been the wife of one man, and there are no children or nieces or nephews, it goes that far off. No one like that to look after her financial needs, and she's past a certain 60 years old. All of these things qualifies us. And if she is qualified in this way, then she wants to be taken into the number. I had a deacon ask me one time. He said, well, Brother Dottie, what does that mean? That she should not be taken into the number? Does that mean we ought not to take them into the church? I said, listen, she's been in the church all of her life. She's been in the church. She's been faithful in all these ways. She has washed the saints' feet. She's entertained strangers. She's given her life to serving. What number is they're talking about? Talking about the number to be supported by the church. If we have a qualified widow indeed in this body, it is the duty of this church to see that they're looked after. I think sometimes all we think is our duties are is to paint the building and keep it from rotting down and all of this. This is fine to keep the meeting house up. And I'll tell you what, if you neglect the meeting house, I don't like that either. I think you ought to keep your meeting house decent. But I tell you, there's something a whole lot more important than the paint on the building, and that is to care for the needs of those within the church of God. And not only those that may be our primary needs, but he says also that distribution might be made to every man according to his needs. There are general needs that may arise within a congregation and within a community that would be the duty of the church. There would be the duty of the brotherhood. And we have even, and once I pastored the church, and they went beyond what was really their church duty. There was a neighbor in that community that did not attend that church. House burned down, and they knew it did not have adequate insurance. It wasn't our church responsibility. We were not obligated to that person as a church. But that church wanted to be obligated and obligated itself. They said, we feel like we could do more as a group than we can as individuals. So they all went together and to do what they could to help refurnish this home for this neighbor who was not a primitive Baptist. You know, the world loves their own. But brethren, many times the way discipleship is really proven in the world is when we reach out and help those who is not even our responsibility in a direct sense. Just loving thy neighbor as thyself. So we're rebellious. We're rebellious. We're rebellious along a lot of these lines. And we say, well, I know that's true, and I know what you're talking about, Brother Dart, is all right, but that'll fit somebody down the road. It doesn't fit us. It doesn't apply to us. And so we pass it on. We let the other fellow have it. And you know what we do? We let the other fellow get the blessing with it. We pass it on down the road, and down the road the fellow that does it gets the blessing. He does it in the truth of God, in the Spirit of God. Older women. You say, well, I don't want to meddle with anybody's business over here. I know that parents have a responsibility toward their children that nobody else on earth has. And you can't pass it off to no Sunday school teacher, no Bible teacher, nobody else, or send them off to somebody's institution, whatever it may be, whether it be a secular school or a religious school or anything else. There's a school at home that you're going to have to do, and God's holding you responsible. Nobody else in the world but you. You are responsible. He's all but they're taught things at school. Well, you better unteach them at home. I don't care what they run into out there. When they bring it home, you better tell them the right and the wrong of that when it gets back. And that responsibility rests on you. Now, that's true with the family unit. But there's a lot of rebellion there. There's a lot of rebellion. Because there's a rebellion, because young people nowadays are being taught we're supposed to do our own thing, and it's not mom and dad's in their business what we do, you see. They're being taught that we can do our own thing. And that may sound kindly, you know, like a lot of freedom on the surface until that little girl comes home and says, Mama, something's happened, you know. Or that little boy comes home and says, Mama, I didn't know this was going to happen. I'm in a bad situation, a situation that you just can't turn a switch and get out of. You know, I appreciate the sermons, and I agree with every word of them that we hear Brother Sam Bryant preach on and other great men teach on about abortion. Yes, sir? Yes, sir. I stand 100% behind those brethren. I am against teeth and toenail. The murder of the innocent. But I'm going to tell you something else. There's one step before that. You wouldn't have to have so much abortion if you could stop what causes it. Now, there's a step ahead of that. But a lot of times we're putting all the emphasis on aborting the unwanted child. But we're not putting much emphasis on what brought it about. What brought it about, my friend, is all of this freedom. All this freedom, living together, staying together. Don't you trust me, Mama? Don't you trust me, Daddy? Yes, we trust you, but we know you're human. And you got a nature. And the opportunities are going to come your way. And you better know something about what you're doing. With a proper warning. Now listen, this is your responsibility. But you rebel against that. You better get down to the birds and the bees. You better get down to brass tacks. You better talk while talking to is worth something. You better preach that sermon before it's too late to talk about repentance. You need to talk about preventative medicine instead of talking about abortion all the time. Talk about something here that would prevent this. But rebel. I want my children. I don't want them to feel like we've got a jailhouse for them. Well, you don't have to have. You need to get close enough to your children. Mother, you need to get close enough to your daughter that she knows who's boss. You know, you're mama and you're daddy. But at the same time, there should be a relationship and a communion that daughter or that son can talk to you on the level that they're trying to communicate on. And you know, you'd be able to talk to them. Now, you wouldn't go talking with a five-year-old child about certain things. But when they reach certain ages, there needs to be time somebody needs to communicate. Don't wait and let them teach them at school. Don't wait, my friend, and let the man on the street tell them. But rebellion. Rebellion in the home. Rebellion along these lines. They say, well, they won't like it. Well, they may not like it now, but what's the results? They're not going to like either. And this could be a mental anguish that'll be with them the rest of their life, so it's better. And so, That's an aspect. I don't know how I got on this tonight. I thought I was going to preach a real sweet sermon here. But here we're speaking about the older women should teach the younger women. Now, what you are to do if parents, father to son, and daughter to daughter, mother to daughter, within the home here, in the family unit is one thing, but when you come into the church, sometimes it's better for an elder and more experienced brother or sister to talk to your son or your daughter in the spiritual aspect than you can. It's the hardest thing in the world for you to give them all of the spiritual advice that they need that could come from a highly experienced person in the church, not trying to be a boss, not trying to be a Jezebel in the church, or trying to be a dictator in the church, but somebody that got the well-being and the goodness of the young members of the church. They need to be tutored, they need to be taught along this line. And older women should teach the younger women. Now this is not talking about mother teaching daughter, I've already covered that. I'm talking about older, experienced sisters in the church teach the younger sisters. And I don't mean off yon in a classroom somewhere to get them off there. I'm talking about right here in conversation with them. And I don't mean during the time the preacher's up preaching either. I'm not talking about then, but I'm talking about while you have opportunity, while you're associated together, when there's a time and a need that you feel that there should be some instructions given. And we've all needed this. And I look back now in my own life as a young minister. I remember when older ministers were giving me some one-to-one advice. But I need to heard them better. See, I wasn't getting it. I wasn't reading them just exactly, but they saw. You see, they could see vanity in me that I couldn't see. I was blind to this, all of this. See, I feel like I can control myself. I know all about these situations. But brother, listen. Despise not prophesying. You better listen when somebody's talking to you. There's some older brethren and older sisters begin to tell you about certain things. They've been down that road. You may think they've never had a temptation. They know nothing about it. You'd be surprised what they do know. I'll tell you something else. You're talking about in the nursing home? I know a lot of those people there. Their bodies are twisted and all like that, but not all their minds are twisted. Some of the greatest wisdom in the world, my friend, you can find in these old twisted and wrecked bodies of people like that. They can tell you about some of the most glorious things of God with a wisdom that you'd be gracious upon. Old brother down in the nursing home, he said, "We hear you." I said, "Well, you know, he hears me on the radio, you know, like that, you know. Now, I'll be glad when you get to chapter so-and-so." In other words, he was keeping up with a whole lot more than I thought. I tell you what, let me tell you, brother, there's a lot of times there's wisdom in these things. These people are listening. And they're keeping up and they know what's going on. And so, in every aspect of our lives, in every aspect of the community of the church, we have this. But then, why? Why does the child of God, why as my dear and precious uncle said, why can't I come in? Why about this? Brother, listen. Those questions can only be answered by you as an individual. Because if there is no scriptural reason why you should not come in, if you have the burden, if you have desire, if you're hungry and thirsting after righteousness, Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." You've got that opportunity. It is here an open door to you. Why do you, O house of Israel, why will you die? Why do you rebel, child of God? When here it is an open door, here is an opportunity. Every time the song is sung, after each sermon is preached, and each time, it used to make me feel bad when we communed and we had some visitors there who believed like we believed, and yet they're not united with the church, and we had to go around and refuse to give them the bread and the wine and wash their feet, and I felt so bad for them. Here they was. I said, I wonder if we're making a mistake. Maybe we ought to go on and let them commune too. One brother told me he did that. I said, no, that's not right. I don't believe that's right. But still, I couldn't logically get it straight in my mind. But it came to my mind in all clarity. I says, no. They've been given an opportunity every meeting day. Every time the gospel has been preached, the opportunity has been given them to come in and put their feet under the table. And so, my friend, if you're not willing to obey and come in and obey the gospel, then you have no right to sit at this table. I don't mean come in this meeting now. Sure, you have a right, and I hope you will. I hope I'll never say anything or do anything that would discourage you from that. But from a standpoint of the communion, to put your feet under the communion table, you're going to have to go take a bath in gospel baptism, my friends, and obey that gospel. To have a right to the tree of life. Blessed are they that do His commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life and enter into the gates into the city. And so when we refuse you communion, it is not that our will, nor our desire. It is because you have rebelled against doing what God has told you to do. You had but, my friend, to obey the gospel and do your duty and walk down the aisle to have all the rights and privileges of the church. Not just for communion. Why will the little child of God that in his heart He says, I know if I was dying, this is all of my hope and all of my salvation. This is everything I've got. I think about the young man I conducted this funeral. Brethren, I believe he was a child of God with all the power of my heart. I've seen the tears flow down his face. And I had no doubt in my mind about his God and my God and his faith in the Lord. But he was a black sheep. There was no doubt about that. He was a rebellious child of God. He had opportunity after opportunity to obey the gospel of Christ. But he himself hardened his heart, not against God from the standpoint of repudiating his doctrine, but by his life, he refused to obey. He refused to obey. Rebellion. My friends, there's children of God here tonight that will leave this meeting house in rebellion against the gospel of the Son of God. Now, I want to say this. I glory in the spunk of these old people that you had to baptize them in a tub. You say, well, that's mighty late. Well, that's all right. That's all right. It's better to come in the 11th hour. I'll assure you one thing. You seen them get the pay, didn't you? You seen them get the penny, didn't you? And you saw the joy. You said, well, then, Brother Darty, you encouraging me then to wait till I'm dead with old age in a nursing home and then come out and baptize me just before I pass off the scene of action and I'm just as well off. No, I'm not telling you that. I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you what? If God is showing you the truth tonight and has shown you yesterday of your experience, He's expected you from that day, the day that He showed you the revelation of the truth, of the love of Christ, and the kingdom of Christ, you have been expected from that day forth to obey the gospel of Christ. And every day that you have procrastinated and put that off, it has been the thief of time. Procrastination is a thief of time. And every day, my friend, that you have wasted in your life is gone forever. A day that you could have served Christ. A day that you could have followed Him. A day, my friend, you could have spent in the house of God with the brethren of God. You hope to live with Him in heaven. You long to be there for all eternity. But every day you waste is a day of life wasted. As my grandfather said, for 52 years You know, I put this off. I don't want to carry it any further. He was telling me about it. I wasn't at the baptism. but he carried me down there and he says, you know, as I recall it, and I've told this, you know, and I love to think about this because Elder Morgan Williams, I believe, as I recall it, spent the night with my grandfather on my dad's side. And he called him Uncle Martin. He said, Uncle Martin, he says, I know you know the truth. I know you believe the truth. He said, well, if I know anything, I know it's truth. And he said, I know you know what the church is at. Well, if I know anything, I know that, you know. On and on. Then he says, well, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. When I go to bed tonight, I'm going to pray God don't give you any more rest. You're setting a bad example for your children, your grandchildren, and your whole family. See, these two old men talking. Just pray. Well, Granddad, let's go to bed, you know. Put him off to bed. He thought that'd be the end of it. But Granddad said when he laid down on the bed, his eyes went right wide open. He said he laid down the morning. Just didn't sleep a wink. That's all he could hear. No peace. No peace. Got up the next morning, got busy. I think John M., who's here now, remember, said, take the preacher to the church. So he brought Brother Morgan Williams up here. He got busy, said he fed all the mules and fed all the cows. He went around every barn, did everything he could do to occupy his mind. And the burden, no peace, no peace. And said, I went right down this little old road right here. He said, and I got right here at this fence post. And he says, then I fell down on my old bony knees. And I says, Lord, if it's right for me to join the church, says, give me the evidence. He said, it was like a voice from heaven. Said, I gave you that 52 years ago. I gave you that 52 years ago. He rose up off of his knees, went to the house to my grandmother and said, Molly, I've never spoke to you on this matter, said, but I've got the consent of my mind. I'm going to offer myself to the church. And she began to weep. And says, Martin, for 40 years I've wanted to do this, but I've never gone ahead of you in anything. Rebellion. Brother, when you're rebellious, you're affecting somebody else in your life. Don't just take all of the credit to yourself. And just say, it's all going to be on me. No, you're influencing somebody else in your family among the believers. He said, oh, I do it if my wife... He didn't say, you do this if your wife does it. If the Lord calls you. This man was talking to me today, this little Myrtle Springs church, you know, that's closed the door temporarily. He said, my wife don't go with me. I want her to go. She don't go. I don't know if she's a member now, but she don't see the need to go. He says, I feel the great need to go. I feel the burden to go. And he says, there's one thing about it. He says, the Lord told me to do this. So now I hope that she'll do it one day and feel the same way as I do. But right now I know this thing is to me as an individual call. But you know, if he says in another place in the 7th chapter, 1 Corinthians, O wife, know not thou shalt save thy husband. O husband, know not thou shalt save thy wife. Not in heaven, my friend, but the influence. In other words, if you believe this, if you believe it in your heart, don't rebel against it. If God's telling you to do something about it, you do that. Don't ask your wife. Don't ask your children. Don't ask your neighbor. Do what God's telling you to do. Don't rebel against God. If God's speaking you to do this. But I tell you one thing. If you'll do what God's telling you to do, He's able to handle the wife and the children and all the rest. He's able to take care of the situation. And if He said, well, I don't think my wife will like it. Well, He's able to make your wife reconcile to it if they don't like it. Or He's been able to make them like it. You don't know what the Lord will do, but He's calling on you. Rebellion. I speak of individual rebellion. If all the people in this community around Old Cool Springs Church right here, that man told me today, said, Brother Darty, I just didn't hardly know there was many primitive Baptists meeting at any meeting place. Anyway, here we were. Our little meeting is gone dead, and not enough people even meeting together to hold a meeting, and we shut our doors. We hadn't disbanded the church, but we were in an inactive state and just sitting here in a dormant state. But he said to come, I said, well, I cried, Rolf. I'm worried to death. I cried. He said, well, he said, I'm telling you, said, look like association here today. And so, but brethren, but still, I tell you this, if the people of this community was not rebelling against the Lord, even the people who are not members of this church would do their duty. Oh, it shines bright here in this community. Oh, what an influence it have, not only on themselves, but their children and their neighbors about them. But rebellion. Rebellion, my friend. We rebel against the Spirit of God that tells us to obey Him, to follow Him, to do His will. He said, well, Brother Darty, you're not going to get me to move with that kind of preaching. I said, well, maybe not. But I tell you one thing, I'm going to sleep better. I'm going to sleep better. You see, this is a two-way street. You know, if I don't preach some preaching like this, the Lord lays it right on my, at my door, friend. Lays it right at my door. Oh, yes, I know how to be a good politician. I could get up here and sweet talk you and tell you you're the sweetest bunch of folks in the world. Everybody here is doing exactly what the Lord wants them to do. All of you living just like you ought to live. And I'm the best preacher in the country. And oh, I'm a model. I'm a model. And like a lady went to Brother Tom Crawford one time and says, you are to me a model preacher and you've got a mellow voice. Oh, he said, man, that just done him so much good. And went home and got him a dictionary and looked up those words. He says, a model is a small imitation of the real thing, and mellow is overripe and almost rotten. And so, that kind of lowered his ego. And so I could tell you folks, I'm the model preacher. I'm just everything to be expected in the preacher. No, I know better than that. And I don't want you to expect that. But I know these are things that I could compromise. But we're not to do that. I like to preach on Absalom tonight, and I that's a sermon I want to preach if the Lord will let me preach it sometime, about Absalom and the son of David. And you know, he was a politician. He got right into the kingdom of God, and he promised these Israelites the lower of the taxes and everything else, and took the kingdom away from his father. He was good looking. He had hair and beautiful hair, and all of this, just a lot of things about Absalom. That's a sermon waiting. I'd like to preach on that sometimes. But anyway, not do that. But the thing about it is this: if we compromise, if we come along and say it's all right to go on and do these things, the blood is laying in our hands. God's going to require it. No wonder Paul says, "I'm pure from the blood of all men."
End of tape.